Today on Maine Calling, gardening as summer turns to fall. September may bring cooler weather, but it's not the end of gardening season. Some say it's actually a good time to plant certain perennials and even some vegetables during these last weeks before the first frost arrives. Of course, with the drought to reckon with, what's the best way to make the most of this season with such dry conditions? I'm Cindy Hahn. Our horticulture experts are ready to answer your questions about planting, pests, soil, bulbs, and more. They'll explain ways to maximize moisture during this drought, how to clean up summer crops, and how best to prepare your garden for next year. We'll also learn why native plants not only serve as healthy habitat for pollinators and wildlife, they can also help make your yard more drought resistant. Smart gardening on Maine Calling, that's coming up next.
Maine Calling is made possible in part by Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure with 19 locations across the state, now open in Bangor and Waterville, and by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal Down East communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. It's technically still summer, but it is starting to feel like fall. Time to take control of your garden, from cleaning up to prepping for next year. Our horticulture experts join us to offer gardening advice for the season, and we'll address what to do about the drought conditions that we're experiencing. Joining me today, Kate Garland is a horticultural professional with the University of Maine Cooperative Extension, and Andrew Tufts is manager of the Bringing Nature Home program at Maine Audubon. We invite you to join the conversation. Are you hoping to keep your garden going strong a little longer? Are you looking for advice on watering during a drought? Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org. You can post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or you can give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. And Andrew, we did talk about the drought on yesterday's Maine Calling, so we learned a lot about how bad it is all across the state. So what is your take on how to manage your yard and garden during a drought? Can you water at this point, or should you just give it up and let everything dry up?
Yeah, thanks, Cindy. So it's, as they said yesterday, the droughts we're seeing these days, these years, are becoming more and more intense. And it lends itself to getting rid of more of your lawn, because a lawn is a very water intensive resource. And so the more you can replace lawn with native plants, the better. I would say our natural plant communities that exist here in Maine are naturally suited to deal with these kinds of droughts. And so the more that you can plant native plants that are found growing together in the places where we live instead of lawn, the better you will be for conserving water.
Are there certain particularly drought resistant or resilient ones that you would suggest?
So I think it, rather than focusing on specific species, it's important to focus on the plant communities themselves and the plants that are found growing together, and that you really want to focus on matching the plants to the site, and that it's the right plant for the right place. So drought tolerance doesn't just mean plants that are found growing, say, in sandy, low water conditions. These all native plants have the potential to be drought tolerant based on the communities they're found in. So if you have a plant growing in a woodland understory, for example, in isolation, it may not be drought tolerant, but when it's found growing with all the other plants it's naturally found with, it then becomes drought tolerant.
Okay, so Kate, say that, you know, you would love to do what Andrew just suggested and add more native plants and have your landscape be that way, but it's not already, and you're dealing with right now in the drought. What are some things to know about either retaining moisture, or, you know, just basically, is it bad to water a lot or a little bit at this stage?
I'm still, if people have the capacity to do some watering, especially for newly installed plants this year, I definitely am encouraging people to be very mindful of that and to be proactive about continuing watering into the fall and Even I was so excited to get the rain this weekend. It
Yeah.
was such a lovely sound. I even with that, it's not sufficient necessarily to get things settled in and prepared for the winter to overwinter. So if you can water, I would highly recommend doing that. And even plants that may have been established that are especially prized plants in your landscape, I would suggest watering those as well because they've definitely been hit and have suffered and from the lack of precipitation this season. This is also a great time to plant. So I love planting in the fall, and so I'd highly recommend if you have some goals in mind as the season comes to a close to go ahead and try to check some of those off your list. Like getting some of those trees or shrubs or perennials into the ground this month is really great because the cooler temperatures and hopefully increased precipitation that we might start to see this time of year, that those two things really make great conditions for getting plants established a little bit. And there's still a little plenty of time for roots to really start to get knitted into the soil before the deep frost sets in. So, and there's also some great deals at your local nurseries and some plant sales, like our nonprofits are oftentimes offering this time of year too. So,
Sure. So, would you suggest any particular perennials or shrubs that you think are really good cold hardy choices?
oh, well, I always go right back to the native plant suggestions, and there are a lot of great lists out there. And the big thing to keep in mind for all gardeners is to really be mindful. I think of what Andrew was referring to is assessing your site and understanding what your site conditions are and planting what's going to work in that site, not necessarily falling in love with a particular plant and then finding out, oh, that plant does not thrive in the conditions that I happen to have. I think all plant lovers have been guilty about falling in love with a plant and trying to make it work in your garden. But if you can be mindful of what kind of soil conditions you have, whether it's well drained or wet, and what kind of sunlight conditions, even just looking at those two factors, which are pretty even to the untrained eye, easy to assess, and then looking at what plants might fit within that category. And there's so many great native plant lists out there that kind
So,
of categorize them by that.
and I know that Andrew's eager to chime in on that too.
Yeah, and just as far as plants that are good to plant this time of year, maybe not so much about that this is the time of year to plant it, but as far as plants that are great for fall foliage or for the blooms, some of my favorites include highbush blueberry, a black chokeberry for the really brilliant red and orange foliage they can add to a landscape. And then thinking about some of the keystone herbaceous plants that are in bloom or starting to bloom, like our goldenrods and asters as well, and even some of our grasses like little blue stem.
Well, staying on the idea of still planting, I mean, we have what, about a month left, right, before the frost hits. What about vegetables? There are certain ones that people can still be putting in, right? Or is it too late?
Yeah, no, that's a great point. So a couple of things with the vegetable gardeners out there. Cover crops are a really great thing to be sowing right now. So that's vegetation to keep the soil covered, li quite literally, but also it's also known as green manure. So it's basically a crop that you would grow to build the organic matter of your soil, which has also some really great benefits of not only building the nutrient value of your soil, but also the moisture holding capacity of your soil. So as we try to build more resilient gardening systems that can tolerate our maybe less predictable precipitation events, having more organic matter in your soil through building cover crops is really good. So a couple that I really like to use a lot this time of year are native oats and field peas, because you can just sprinkle those over the surface of the soil, water them in. If you can tamp them in just so they have really good seed to soil contact, that's even better. But it doesn't take a lot to sow them, and they grow. They put a good amount of growth on depending on how long our fall is. And then they reliably die back over the winter time, which seems like kind of a weird thing to say, but I preferred those cover crops that die back, so you don't have to put a lot of work into killing them or incorporating them in the next spring. They just create kind of a neat mulch on top in the spring of this dead plant material, and as they decay, that organic matter builds the soil, physical properties and sometimes chemical properties as well, and nutrient properties. So cover crops, really good to sow. You can also sow some cold hardy veggies if you plan to do some season extension. And season extension, you don't necessarily have to have a greenhouse. I love that season extension can be as simple as putting some wire hoops in the garden and throwing some row cover over it, which is a spun-bound cloth material that allows light through but provides some thermal protection. And it's surprising how much you can extend your harvest and possibly get a jump start on your production the next spring if you do that. So things like spinach and Swiss chard and radish, salad turnips are one of my new favorites. And those are short season crops that are also tolerant of colder temperatures.
Yeah, I heard the saying that September is the new May, right? That
Yeah.
it's a time to still be thinking of growth. So, Andrew, do you have any cheating methods to extend the growing season that Kate mentioned? Some easy ways to just kind of stretch things out further? Mulch, she mentioned mulch, for example. What ways can we use mulch?
Yeah, I think I don't have ways for when it comes to native plant landscaping to necessarily extend the season, but it's always important to think about if you're thinking about providing pollinator habitat or wildlife habitat to think about the diversity of species so that you can prolong bloom times and having those late season asters and other plants that provide habitat well into the fall in that way. And when it comes to mulching, yeah, just repeating what Kate said about the importance of leaving the leaves where they fall and how they can help to insulate the soil and the roots of the, especially with newer plantings. If you're putting in a planting this time of year, which is the best time of year to plant, it can certainly go a long way to put some mulch in for that initial planting.
Okay, great. You'll like this message from Beth on Facebook, Andrew. She said, "I enjoy attending Maine Audubon's annual native plant sale each spring and have planted three new earth-friendly ecosystems in my yard. These native gardens need little water in times of drought compared to non-native plants and flowering annuals. I love them and the beautiful flowers they bring, and so do the bugs. I believe the Wild Seed Project just had their native plant sale as well." So, definitely in keeping with what you were saying. Is there anything else coming up in terms of workshops or events that this time of year for anybody interested in learning more about native plants?
Yeah, I love to hear that. Well, we've extended our plant sale to be May through October. We have our online sale that goes right through October now, enabling folks to get plants in the ground right until the ground freeze and plants go dormant. But otherwise, lots of workshops out there, whether that's through the Cooperative Extension, Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens, Maine Audubon. We have plant walks coming up, various plant sale events going on. So check out our events page for that. And yeah, fall is a great time for these workshops.
I think you have something to add, right, Kate?
Yeah, and I want to mention how awesome the general public is. Sometimes they're our best PR folks. So whoever wrote that did a great job. I'll echo that. I love Audubon's resources and their educational opportunities. We do also have some exciting webinars. We have a fall webinar series coming up. So everything from growing great garlic to things to do in your late season garden. We also have one on growing native plants from seed and a beginner's guide to composting. So all kind of fall themed topics. And those are webinars available to anyone on specific dates. So they can go to our website and find those. And then we also have a pollinator friendly gardening course that can be accessed anytime.
Great. Okay, here's an email from Jack again, back to the drought. He says you can use water that is condensed by air conditioners and dehumidifiers for watering plants and other non-consumption purposes. Any tips along those lines? Rain barrels, other ways to boost the water that you have for watering plants? Go ahead, Andrew.
So I think that's fantastic. Any chance you have to recycle and reuse the water on your site and catching it and slowing down the flow, as I like to say, is a great thing to focus on. And the more you can have catchment si systems to water potentially newly installed plantings, the better, especially this time of year. So
Yeah, that's a great suggestion. Thank you, Jack. I wanted to turn to bulbs, Kate, and spring blooms. And what I think generally the rule of thumb is you do that closer to Halloween. Is that when you start putting in those bulbs? And tell us what you need to think about.
I think, Cindy, you hit on the number one thing that I think is a good thing to remind all gardeners is it's kind of like in spring. It's tempting to get ahead and get a jump start on those fall gardening tasks, but that is one that I would really try to push back until the soil cools a little bit more. I've seen people still successfully plant fall bulbs and things like garlic a little on the early side and have it over winter just fine, but it is kind of better to wait until mid to late October for those of us that are in the central Maine area and go a little bit later if you're in southern Maine, warmer climates of Maine to do that bulb planting. But yeah, it's always I love planting garlic, and so I always look forward to doing that around the Halloween time. It's an easy time to remember to plant your garlic. Keep the
Give
killer one.
vampires away. That's great. And also the other thing to wait on is that you can actually kind of do your cleaning up too early. Is that true? Whether it's for the beneficial bugs or if you're trying to clean up your garden, is it wise to wait a little bit, Andrew?
I mean, the ideal scenario is leave everything in place until well into next spring. They often say until sometime in May, if possible. Of course, some folks like things to look a little less messy, and so if you can, don't take everything all at once. Take it in phases if you can. But I personally think a naturalistic planting design is beautiful, left standing all winter long. It adds that interest that otherwise is completely devoid in the landscape if you do that cleanup in the fall.
Okay, but are there certain things you really need to pull up by the root and other things you need to cut back? Or just, I mean, even if it's not hyper tidy, there's certain tasks you have to do.
So in the fall, one thing I like to do is to look for potential introduced or invasive species that might be in the landscape. If you have any issues with that in your area, this is a great time to look out for those and try to make sure those are not coming into the landscape or displacing some of the native plant communities.
Okay, well, we have questions coming in, but we'll get to those after the break. This is Maine Calling. We're talking all about gardening. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. Are you a spur of the moment gardener or are you a planner? Now is the time to take stock of what worked and what didn't in your garden this year and make plans and changes for next season. Our gardening experts are here to offer advice. Andrew Tufts is with Maine Audubon, and he manages the Bringing Nature Home program. And Kate Garland is a horticulturist with the UMaine Cooperative Extension. We invite you to join the conversation. Tell us about your gardening successes and failures. Email us at talk@mainepublic.org or comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. I just wanted to loop back to you, Kate, because I know Andrew was touting the advantages of leaving things a little messy and natural, but there are certain other cleanup tips that you still wanted to add to the conversation. Talk about when you're cleaning up your vegetable garden, you can't completely just let it be, right?
I mean, I'm fully on board with what Andrew had mentioned, and I always love telling gardeners that they should be doing less work. It's always very well received advice a lot of times. But with vegetable gardening, there are a couple exceptions to that, in that if you have Plants that have diseases or disease symptoms, I would suggest getting those out of the garden. A lot of times, like with tomatoes, for example, those tend to often have a lot of diseases. And so what I do is I typically lop those off with a pair of loppers at the soil. So I'm not even really disrupting the soil too much. The roots really hold on to a lot of soil if you try to yank them out, and you don't need to do that. It comes out beautifully in the next spring when you go to plant. Those are great little transplanting holes when you pull the little stumps out. But just getting that top growth out of the garden, so that if you do have any diseases on that tissue, that doesn't overwinter in the soil and reinfect the next crop of plants, for example. And then if you have there's a whole bunch of different insect pests out there, but some of those might overwinter in debris in your vegetable garden as well. So number one, find out what that pest might be if you haven't had it identified, and then determine whether that might need to be dealt with in terms of removing overwintering habitat for those insects. But the rest of your landscape, leave it be.
Like that. I like less is more. Less work is good. Let's go to calls. Maggie calling from York Beach. Hi, Maggie.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My parents bought our house in York Beach about 50 years ago, and my father's hobby was gardening, and there was a wonderful store in, or I should say, a plant store in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. And what he did is he bought all, they sold local plants and things that would thrive in this environment and were locally. And of course, that was 50 years ago, and I've been overrun with weeds and things. Most of the things he planted are still coming up and still beautiful. But I've tried to replant some things. Stupid. I went to a big box store and bought plants that have nothing to do with this area. And they either die or they infest something else. And the worst one was a privet. Ugh.
Well, gosh, Maggie, I think what you're saying, Andrew can comment on, right, Andrew?
Yeah, absolutely. I know privet in particular is a really problematic introduced species that, if left to its own devices, can really take over a landscape. So it's a lot of work in that way when you have a disturbance in a landscape.
Go ahead, Kate, you too.
Yeah, I think just touching on the fact that there are some survivors in that landscape that have survived the years reminded me that fall is a really great time to divide plants too. So if you have some plants that are really performing really well and you want to add to your landscape and grow it a little bit more, move things around, this is a great time to dig them up and move them around, especially things that are the spring and summer blooming perennials. Those are generally the ones that you would divide in the fall, while fall blooming ones you would divide in the spring. But yeah, just good little tip to save you some money too, but shopping locally is always great.
Great. Thanks for calling, Maggie. And we have a question here from Karen, wondering how to grow boneset seeds I have in my fridge where they've been for over a month. I purchased them in spring of 2025. Do I have to stratify, wet or dry? Is it better to wait and sow them come spring in a pot or a moist garden area? I read that success rate is low. Is that true? So lots of questions about boneset. Andrew.
Yeah, boneset's one of my favorite plants. It's a beautiful, very kind of alternative flower type that can the plant itself can get quite tall. That's great for the back of a border. Can work really well with Joe Pye weed. But as far as sowing from seed, it's a great one to grow from seed. The seeds of boneset are really quite small, and so they need light to germinate. And so these are the ones where you'd want to make sure you just sprinkle them on top of the soil. Don't press them into the soil. If they're in the fridge now, my recommendation would be to keep them there for a bit longer until it's seed sowing season, where If you're going to be sowing them directly into pots, the time for that would be as we get further into November, December, early January. They need roughly 30 to 60 days to germinate. Boneset does specifically. So as long as you have roughly 30 to 60 days of that cold period outside, that will break the dormancy of the boneset. But
Wow.
it's important when it comes to seed sowing to look up specific germination requirements for each species.
Oh, that's really good to know. Well, so hopefully Karen can succeed with that. Thanks for the advice. Let's go to Richard calling from Sebago Lake. Hi, Richard.
Hello, Cindy. Hey, a couple of quick comments. First of all, I used to add clover to my lawn, and especially during drought times, the clover tends to stay greener. And I never cared much for a monoculture grass lawn anyway. But it always looks nice and provides nitrogen when you mow it. So it's a nice amendment to the lawn. Also, the best time to plant or prepare for planting trees is this time of year. I've had fruit trees throughout my yard. Fedco Seeds has a mix of amendments that you can add to the soil now. Cover them with mulch, and come spring, you've got a nice prepared bed. Dig a little hole and throw in your tree.
Wow, Richard, sounds like you know what you're doing. I know whenever we do these shows, we talk about clover and how much it can enhance a lawn, a grass-filled lawn. And so, is it really something you could just sprinkle clover seeds around and let them grow where they do? Or do you have to kind of get rid of grass to put the clover in?
I just broadcast it throughout the lawn. And then in the spring, you get these beautiful flows of clover blooming. And yeah, especially if you practice no-mow May, boy, it's nice to have a little one patch of red clover coming up and another of some yellow and white clover.
Great. Well, thanks for sharing what you do, Richard. Andrew, what do you say about using clover?
So when it comes to lawns, clover's another non-native that there are better native ground covers for ecological gardening, but for the sake of a lawn, it certainly is better than just the grass, and it can help in that way. It can help to make it more potentially drought tolerant in a number of ways. It's nitrogen fixing, as the caller said. So yeah, I think it's a really easy thing to add to the landscape if you want to. You can often just direct sow it right on top of the grass, or if you're thatching the grass, dethatching the grass, that's a good time to add the clover seed in as well.
Kate,
Okay.
I want to put in a pitch for the Wild Seed Project. They have a really fantastic publication on ground covers too, that provides a lot of inspiration. I think they did a beautiful job kind of showing the array of native plants, and nice options for different types of ground cover settings at different heights and whatnot.
Yes, they do really great work. I've looked up that for information for myself for sure. This is an email from Stephen. After decades of organic gardening, I have succumbed to defeat to the deer, woodchucks, and drought. I have been unsuccessful finding others who want to take over the garden, but without a reliable, adequate water supply, there is no interest. What are your suggestions for a perennial cover crop to preserve the high quality soil that I've built up over the years that won't be attractive to the deer as I ponder the future of this garden plot? Oh, poor Stephen. It sounds like there's hope, right? If he has good soil, what any ideas for some perennial cover crop he's wanting to know about?
Well, I'm a little bit stuck on the perennial cover crop. And it depends on how long of a pause he's interested in taking, I guess. If he anticipates someone or himself going back into gardening after he, because sometimes it's just a matter of getting to January and getting your mind back into the anything's possible phase in January, you're like, okay, I guess I can do gardening again. If he thinks that it might be within a year, what I would suggest is maybe considering just making a cover crop plan for the upcoming season. And that might be as simple as doing maybe buckwheat in the beginning of the season, and then right after that flowers, or right while it's flower, like shortly after it's flowering, before it actually develops seed, cutting that down and doing a second cover crop for the remainder of the season. That would be kind of my shorter term approach. If he gets into a perennial cover crop, then he's going to have to determine how to kill that off. If that is going back into vegetable production. So I guess I'd love to have more of a chat with him to figure out what his long and short-term goals are and the possibilities of when he might be getting back into that space.
So would you suggest that Stephen get in touch with Cooperative Extension?
Yep. Or even just exploring some of the Cooperative Extension cover crop resources out there. We just mentioned cover cropping in our most recent Maine Home Garden News, and I provided a link, I think, to the UNH resource on cover crops that I think does a nice job of outlining some of the pros and cons to some of the different cover crop options, because there's a lot of different types that you can potentially use in the vegetable garden, and reasons for using some and not others.
Okay, good to know. Here's another email from Carl, and he says, it is September 9th, and you just said the first frost is in about a month away. That is now true. I grew up in New Gloucester, 10 miles inland from the ocean, living in the same house for nearly 60 years. We had a big family garden. As kids, we were tasked with weeding and harvesting. As a kid circa 1970, it was always a happy morning after the first killing frost, because then our garden toiling season was over. We always got a killing frost in the first week of September, once in late August. Now it is well into October. So, Kate, have you observed that shift in time?
Oh, yes, I'm not our climatologist by any means, but I will say that I remember last fall going, our killing frost was quite late. I don't have the specific dates, but I was shocked at how long of a season we had, and was actually kind of quite grateful opposite of the writer here, because I had a little bit more time to get a lot of tasks done, or get those peppers ripened on the plant, for example. So yes, I think it is unsettling to see how long our seasons are. And I think I try to aim for getting a lot of my chores done and a lot of my harvesting done before like the end of September, the last week of September, because that's typically when we see the frost happen in central Maine, but that's based on NOAA weather data over many years. I try to look at those statistics when I'm trying to figure out what our fall frost date is.
Yeah, between NOAA and the Farmer's Almanac, which one do you go by?
I go by the NOAA one, and I think it's the 50% chance of fall frost is right around like September 23rd or something like that. Please, I probably shouldn't say that on public radio and have everyone hear me now, but I think that's what's stuck in my head now.
How much does it differ from the tip, you know, the north to the south, you think, or the coast and inland? Those are all factors in when the frost comes, right?
Yeah, those are our factors for sure. So I don't know right off the top of my head what that might be, but when we do our vegetable, we have a planting chart for the home vegetable garden, and we typically say in coastal Maine, for the suggested planting dates, start 10 to 14 days earlier, and in northern Maine, plant 10 to 14 days later, based on those early dates. So that's kind of the window that we generally recommend. But we all know as Mainers that there's
no,
what's the forecast? Don't go by like the dates. Go by the forecasts.
Look up at the sky. Yeah. Well, we're going to take another quick break. Our number is 1-800-399-3566. Call with your gardening questions. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. We are talking all about gardening, what to plant, what to clean up, bulbs, pests, soil, and making that transition from summer to fall. With me, Kate Garland with UMaine Cooperative Extension and Andrew Tufts with Maine Audubon. We want to hear from you. Call 1-800-399-3566. And let's go to a call now from George calling in from Greenville. Hi, George. Go ahead.
Hey guys, appreciate it. So, looking at the mullein plant, usually just forage for it. is there a way to get that to propagate into an herb garden? I've tried in the past, not with a super amount of effort, but maybe what season, where to get a native seed, etc.
Sounds like Andrew, you might be able to answer that one.
Was the plant mullein?
Yes.
Yeah. So mullein is a non-native here in Maine, but I know it's definitely popular for various medicinal qualities. Kate, do you have thoughts on that?
I don't have experience propagating it. I think it's one of the examples of weeds, which is such a broad term and a touchy term, but that produce hundreds of thousands of seeds, actually. And those seeds, I think, can stay viable for quite a while. Now, when plants produce that many seeds, the germination rate is oftentimes not super high. So I haven't had a chance to try to propagate them from seed, but I would think if you had an area that you wanted to, this would be the time when that seed is probably starting to ripen. I would wait for it to fully dry on the plant before you try to, you know, harvest it and shake it out into the area. But I'm also not super familiar with how much you might regret doing that in a particular area, because as the good point that Andrew made, if it's not native in the area, I would do your research before you actually start kind of playing Miss Rumpheus or the Lupin Lady, so sprinkling it all over the place. So
great. Thanks for your question, George. Andrew, I just wanted to go back to the whole messy versus tidy discussion we touched upon earlier, because one of our callers, Richard, talked about no mow May, and you know, letting things be. But then there's always the question about ticks. I mean, I know we're trying to have a beneficial habitat for wildlife, and that is a big goal of what you do. But then what do you do about it attracting some of the not so beneficial things?
Yeah. So the ticks subject is tricky, but I will say I don't think the answer is to cut everything back and to sterilize the landscape. I think we have to learn how to live with them. Some of the things I've heard that are effective is if you have pathways through your landscape, make those a little wider so that you're not brushing up against the landscape. And then for everything else, when you are amidst the landscape, then just check yourself when you go back inside, and you know, where if you can wear treated clothing that can keep the ticks off you, and so I would always tend to advise people away from not planting or not having planting native for the sake of not attracting ticks, because I think that's often a misconception, is that, you know, ecologically rich, intact landscapes are not necessarily where you find ticks. It can often be in areas of historical disturbance where a lot of non-native or introduced invasive species have taken hold.
Well, that's interesting. Thanks. Let's talk to Amy calling in from Rockport. Hi, Amy. Go right ahead.
Hi, I'm Amy Thomas. I am the president of Wildlands Midcoast Maine. We are partnering with the Camden Public Library to put on a huge native plant sale, which will occur this coming Sunday, September 14th, from 9 to 1 at the Camden Public Library Amphitheater. We'll have speakers. We'll have local nurseries who specialize in sustainably seed-grown, genetically diverse plants. We'll have about eight or so of those. It's a festival. It's a party. It's a great time. We're going to have kids' activities. We're going to have banana ice cream. It's just going to be a ton of fun. We usually have about 300 or 400 people in attendance, and we get a lot of plants sold to the community.
That sounds great. Thank you, Amy. Why banana ice cream in particular?
I think because so many people have issues with dairy, I think it's a great substitute. So we're sponsoring this, promoting this new local business. Very excited about her coming and she'll be located right next to the kids' activities.
Oh, fun. Well, thanks for sharing that. You're welcome to post something on social media on Maine Calling's Facebook page so more people can know about that. Thanks for calling, Amy. And Andrew, it does seem like there's growing awareness and activity around native plants in Maine. Have you seen that happen?
Oh, yeah. It's exponential awareness over the past 5, 10, 15 years. It's been really beautiful to watch. And, Maine Audubon's work to play a role into building that marketplace and to see all these other organizations doing their part. It's a really wonderful community to be a part of in getting the word out and making sure that these native plants are available for folks who are learning about habitat restoration.
Great. And Kate, before we get too far close to the end of the show, I know that you wanted to kind of give people some tips about taking stock of what worked, what didn't work in your garden, and making a plan for next year, because I know for me, I'm very impulsive. I just do whatever strikes me at the moment. And you're a big advocate of planning things out.
Yes, but Cindy, I'm with you of being not personally as great at planning. So I don't want to mislead anyone saying that Kate is a super organized person. But I will say, coming from that perspective of I talk with a lot of gardeners in the wintertime that's, have a particular issue that they were facing last season and want to know how to avoid it in the future, but they don't know what it was, like it was a particular pest or a disease, and they didn't take pictures. And so I would say one of the things as the season comes to a close is if you are dealing with particular challenges, or on the other side of the coin, really especially love a specific aspect of your garden, take lots of pictures, but don't be afraid to take the pictures of things that didn't work well. And that might be especially important as you're trying to research what how to deal with things. So a lot of times, a lot of landscape issues can be dealt with proactively if you know what the issue was, especially like fungal diseases and whatnot. So taking close pictures of the upper and the lower surface of leaves, any pictures of insect damage, or actually if you see the potential culprit, taking pictures of the insect, even if you don't have time to diagnose it right now, that information will be really powerful as you plan for next season.
And I always hear from gardeners that people tend to get locked in on where things have to sit, right? So it's important to be really flexible about just moving things and not sticking with the way you've done it before.
Yeah, I see gardeners, I tend to take this role in my own home landscape. I don't have a very extensive gardener. What I do, a garden is, I do that professionally. I kind of serve as more of an editor in my landscape. And so I'm really lucky to kind of live in a very natural area, live in a wooded area. And so what I've done is I just kind of let things grow and then edit out what I don't think I want to see or what I don't think will work well once it matures. So things that might be oversized or overpower a space. And I just watch what grows and watch what thrives, and especially edit out anything that might be potentially invasive. But other than that, it's a beautiful way to landscape too. So.
Resilience. Yes. Okay. Yeah. Laura calling from Gorham. Hi, Laura. What did you want to ask?
Hi. I have a property in the area of Southern Maine called Pine Barrens. The soil is very sandy. And on that property, there's an old packed gravel parking area for maybe like 8 cars that I don't use. And it grows this horrible patchy weeds. They look terrible. And there's 2 packs to dig up. I'm wondering if there's anything else I can sprinkle on there that might look nicer, but which would grow like on top of that gravel, like apparently these other weeds can.
Yeah, weeds tend to outpace everything else, right? Kate or Andrew, anything that on a gravelly area that could do okay?
Yeah. Well, I think about like along our coastlines and mountaintops and rocky mountaintops. I get a lot of inspiration from those settings because you look at it botanically and you're like, how can things grow in those areas? So if you have patience. There are things that will grow in those settings. And so kind of going into those settings and looking at what's growing and identifying those options might be something to get some inspiration. It depends on your sunlight too. I didn't catch exactly how much sunlight you might have. But things like juniper or bearberry quickly come to mind. Even some low bush blueberries might even be suitable if you can kind of break things up a little bit. I'm sure Andrew has a bazillion ideas, but also one thing that also I thought of is reading what those weeds are. Some of those weeds actually might not look really pretty in that moment, but if you let them be, might turn out to be something that has some beautiful value to it or ecological value to it or both.
I have a feeling Andrew agrees with that, right? Weeds aren't always weeds.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's actually, this landscape sounds super interesting, and I'm often drawn to these kinds of low nutrients, sandy, potentially shallow soil landscapes. You can get a really interesting diversity of plants here, building off of the plants that Kate mentioned. Just things like our true wild lupin that is actually native to Maine is found often in those kinds of conditions. So that could be a cool opportunity to try to establish that, along with things like butterfly milkweed, stiff-leaved aster, little blue stem, as I mentioned before. These are all plants that can grow really well in those harsher conditions, depending on the sunlight conditions.
Great. Well, good luck, Laura. Sounds like there are some options there. This is an email from Seth. He says, a great resource for folks who want to do more but aren't sure where to start is my mom, Sharon Turner. She's based in Washington, Maine, and is a longtime master gardener with a large following of gardening devotees. Each spring, she teaches a class that visits each student's home and gives you personalized advice and ideas. The class is available through Five Towns CSD in the Midcoast. She also runs Crystal Lake Farm and Nursery, halfway between Camden and Rockland, where you can buy locally grown native perennials, trees, and shrubs. So that's some mom, huh?
Oh, the gardening community is so full of people like mom. I love that. I learn so much whenever I teach a class and provide that space for conversations. There's always some tips to pick up, but I love that there's so much knowledge in our gardening community.
Yeah, I'd echo that. It's probably one of the best things about my job is getting to meet all of these different people doing this amazing work.
That's great. Let's go to Max calling in from Hollowell. Hi, Max.
Hi, thanks for having me on for a sec. So I mainly wanted to ask just about the connection between water quality and soil health, because I do a small backyard vegetable garden, and I really want to be in it, you know, for the long haul. And our water around the Augusta Hollowell area can have really high pH, depending on what part of the season you sample it in. And I honestly don't have great information on that, because the water test that's available on the website doesn't say whether the high pH is from something straightforward like calcium carbonate or whether it's from, you know, sodium bicarbonates or something that would be a little more scary. On the other hand, I also know that the earth is a great buffer. And I guess what I want to ask is, do I need to think about any sort of pH remediation or water testing like you would need to worry about in container gardening? Or is the earth just robust enough to handle consistently high pH water year after year after year without problems, and I'm just overthinking it?
Good question, Max. Kate?
That's a very good question that I would have to do a little bit of research on to better answer, and also probably get a little bit more detailed information about your specific numbers and chat with you a little bit more. I wish I could answer very quickly on this one, but I want to make sure you get the right answer.
Sure. So people have
call your
water
extension office.
Yeah, there you go. That's the answer to everything. Yeah, call your extension office, Cooperative Extension, for answers. But what about soil tests? Is that an important thing to do each year or at some point?
Oh, this is a great time of year. I mean, it's kind of like planting a tree, you know, the saying about planting a tree 20 years ago, but the next best time is now. And so same with soil testing. If you haven't soil tested, in the last 3 to 4 years, and especially if you're seeing nutrient challenges, signs of things not thriving, then I would definitely go ahead and get a soil sample to the Maine Soil Testing Service and get that tested. And what a standard soil test will give you is information about soil pH and different nutrient levels and organic matter levels, and give you also a background test on whether heavy metals might be present in the soil, specific heavy metals. So it's good information to kind of make decisions moving forward. I thought of the caller earlier about prepping for the fruit trees. That's a great information to have moving forward to prep your soil.
Yeah, lots of things to do now for the year ahead. So thanks so much to both of you for giving us all the great advice. Andrew Tufts is with Maine Audubon, and Kate Garland is with UMaine Cooperative Extension. Today's sound engineer was Sam Tracy, and tomorrow on the program, emergency preparedness, what the state and communities have in place, and what residents need to know. I'm Cindy Hahn, and this is Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.